This is KHOI, Dory City, Ames, and surrounding area. And I've heard about this radio station all the way on the streets of Manhattan in New York City.
Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our Central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with our good neighbor Pat Schlierbaum and our engineer and station manager, Mike Murphy.
We start out the day with mostly sunny skies and westerly winds from 10 to 20 miles per hour. Our daytime high will be reaching 95 today. Currently, it's 79 degrees. This evening, we'll have mostly clear skies and a low of around 64. The winds will be decreasing out of the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. We are under a heat alert, so if you have to be outside, take frequent breaks, find a cool place, and stay hydrated. And you might want to save the laundry and the dishwasher for after sunset. And if you have critters outside, make sure they have some shade, moving air, and plenty of water.
We have Aja Lyons with us, has joined us this morning. Good morning, Aja.
Good morning.
I'm glad you could join us. We want to talk to you this morning about nature walks. You've got some information for us to share with our listeners today.
Yes. So I am the student steward of the Everett Casey property out in rural Boone County, Ogden. So people are often surprised to find out that the English department at Iowa State oversees 76 acres of a wilderness tract at a land-grant institution. Scholarly academics, some of us are nature nerds, that was gifted when Everett Casey gifted this piece of real estate to the university out in 2008, and he specifically designated it for the use of the English department. I enjoy being a woman of the people, and I, even though it's private property for the English department, I love to share it with the community, and so June 25th at 10 a.m., for those who contact me at ajalyv, as in violin, e, at iastate.edu, are welcome to come out and join me for a hike. It's about mile and a half of trail that I've personally built myself to just enjoy this property. It's gorgeous. Bluff Creek runs through it. We've got some beautiful mushrooms out there, and it's just gorgeous. You can wade through the creek. It's wonderful, and it's a great place, especially with, you know, COVID still kind of ravaging through. There's hickory, oak, basswood, hackberry, locust. There's this gorgeous alfalfa field. There's an apiary.
The apiary will take the bees, for the folks that aren't really familiar with what apiary is, honeybees. That basswood you referred to is in bloom this time of year, and that tree is sometimes called a bee tree. I don't know if your listeners realize that, but so they'll get to see some pollinators in action. So you described a little bit about what you might see. Are there any prairie remnants associated with the part of the woodland, or is it primarily a woodland habitat?
I will say that there's a bit that needs to be reintroduced. There's definitely, it's mostly woodland. There is a bit of work that needs to be done, but I'm working on, and I welcome volunteers. You need some community service hours, give me a call.
Okay.
Some invasive species have taken over, and I intend to take care of that. I had an environmental field experience work that I had to do as part of my, I'm a graduate student in the English department, but my stewardship plans for the year are to work on getting rid of that invasive species, but it is mostly woodland, but I do tend to reach you. There are some bits of native prairie out there, mm-hmm. but that is a lot of the work that does need to be done, is reintroducing some of the native prairie aspects that are present, but minimal.
When you're speaking about invasive species, I would assume those would be things like the mustard plant, maybe buckthorn. Is there honeysuckle, those types of invasives?
Oh, mostly honeysuckle, multiflora rose, but it's heavy honeysuckle. Definitely in need of some savanna restoration and oak woodland restoration.
Sounds to me like you might have to find somebody with some goats. I say that because a number of, like Story County Conservation, for example, has instituted the use of goats when they're trying to reclaim a savanna area. And what they do is they'll gnaw on that woody vegetation and set it back. So it might be a strategy worth trying to investigate for you. So you would have four-legged critters that would be volunteers, and I'm sure they would be happy to help out.
Well, that sounds lovely, and I would absolutely welcome their presence. Human friends and animal friends. Oh, that is something I need to add. Fur friends of all kinds are definitely welcome at Everett Casey.
Okay. And so when folks bring those out, I assume they would need to be on leash? That
is preferable, as long as, you know, going to be safe for all kinds. We can't really have them attacking other lives that are present, whether they're human or animal or plant.
And use proper pet etiquette as far as picking up after them. They decide to deposit their little calling cards, that kind of thing, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
When you set up these invites, do you have that time available on your contact information? Or how do folks learn when you're available, or do you announce those ahead of time or post those?
Currently, I've been posting them on Facebook groups such as Ames People, the Boone, Iowa community page, Hiking Central Iowa. But I have recently expanded to posting flyers in places where I know a lot of nature lovers kind of venture out, such as Paradox in Boone, Wheatsfield, Dog-Eared Books, Cafe Diem, just places where I know people kind of get out and about and such. So people can definitely look for those.
I would assume then word of mouth also would be a big factor. Have you had repeat visitors?
So far, I've only had the one
hike.
So the next one will be this Saturday, and I hope to have one or two in the fall. So I definitely hope to see people again and again, and I welcome input. Last time I got slowed down a little bit. I was really excited, so we'll slow the walk down a bit.
Okay. Well, it's funny because folks don't realize that when you go out, you could spend an hour and not get maybe more than 10 feet if you really had a bird enthusiast, a plant enthusiast, and an insect enthusiast, and they're all pointing out different things. I know on some walks that I've been on, somebody wants to get you through the trail, but then there are others that, hey, what's right here? And it sounds to me like you kind of have a mix of that.
Yes.
Oh, great. So do you have anything like if folks would need binoculars, do you have any resource where you could loan them out when they're on the walk with you, or how do you do that type of thing?
You know, I don't have that, but that's something to consider and invest in. I mainly tell people wear some long pants and long sleeves and get ready to get wet because there's three creek crossings.
Okay. Yeah. Dress for the weather and for the ground conditions.
Absolutely. At your own risk, creek crossing, so that there's tree logs, there's no fancy bridges. I mean, this is entirely a nature preserve. It is not a park. It is not, you know, this is not Ames. This is rural Boone County. And it's just, you know, students maintaining the place. It's not, you know, some upscale suburban city property.
Sure.
And it's meant to preserve nature and to be enjoyed. And it's completely natural state.
Okay. Aja, how many other students are routinely helping you? Do you have a number of them, a core group?
No.
What do you have?
There's only me.
There's only you. So
yes.
This we could also use as a call out to some of your fellow students.
Yes, that would be nice. Well, I will say I only recently was assigned this position. There is one other individual. And his focus is different. He's a, you know, forager. He's a big food guy. And so he is going to have some community events centered around food. And he's a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
and he has a different focus, and he definitely intends to participate as well. So I don't want to say that he's not a guy who, you know, is going to sit there and not help. It's not that he's that. I just tend to overdo a little bit, but the English department has a lot of quiet, shy nerds. And the property also has this really fantastic picnic table and Woodburn poems along the trail, and those were put there by the previous steward, Emily Golden, who was a wonderful steward. And I will say that she welcomed my cohort during the pandemic to come out there. And it has been a place that was a refuge for when people wanted to be social during the pandemic. But I will say that, you know, some writers are more social than others, and some are more shy than others. Yeah. So I don't want to totally diss the people in my program and put them down, but, you know, some people have different levels of engagement, and some people are not as nature focused. And there are a lot of bugs out there because some people aren't as ready to wield power tools and cut the grass low. And I can say that's been a deterrent for some people. I am a steward who is not afraid to get that gas powered weed whacker and cut the grass on down. So if that's been a deterrent for some people, now the grass has been cut lower. So come on out.
Okay. It sounds like a great place for, since you're talking about folks that are in the English department, a great place to be, maybe get some solitude so they can do some of their own creative activities in that situation, be inspired by nature. Gosh, yes. you might just have the next Thoreau found at some point. You never know. Kind of sounds like you might be a candidate for that.
Well, hopefully people will read my memoir when it comes out, Honey Wine from Creek Waters. It has been inspired by the work that I've done out there the past year. I started last July. And I want to say it took me about maybe 6 to 8 months to complete the mile of trail that I've done. And really being in solitude and working alone, even though I, yes, would have appreciated a bit more help. A few people from the community did. The Ames community, I will say, when I requested help, a few people did come out and help me. And I, again, really appreciated the Ames community has been wonderful. And I am ever so grateful for this community, which is why I decided to open up and do these hikes. I've been here for August will be, I think, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 9 years and open this up because I love this community so much. Honey Wine from Creek Waters, a memoir. And I hope people will consider reading it.
Well, I think our community radio, this is a great place to get that word out and build your community as well. You are part of our community. Wish you the best of luck and join us again sometime in the future. We'll be sure to have your info on our website so folks can access that. Aja Lyons, thanks for taking us on a little hike into your nature realm.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. And if you're just joining us, I'm Mike Metz along with Pat Schlerbaum, and Mike Murphy is at the controls, and it's about 16 minutes after the hour, and we have Paul Reedhead joining us now. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Mike.
It's great to have you join us this morning, and gosh, this fits right in with our last guest. We're going to talk a little bit about something that's near and dear to your heart. And I know to some of the rest of us, we're looking at the Pole Prairie here this morning. What kind of information do you want to share with us?
Thanks for having me on, Mike. I appreciate that. So I'm sort of, if you will, the de facto head of the Friends of Ames High Prairie Group, which is a long established group of local citizens and entities that are interested in prairies and in interested in Pole Prairie particularly. Pole Prairie has been, well, part of it is remnant prairie. It's been there forever. It's owned, the property is owned by the Ames School District and for many years was managed by the Nature Conservancy. They had a 49-year contract that ran out about 3 years ago. And there was no management for a year and a half. And now Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation has signed a three-year contract to do management. And so Friends Group works under the auspices of and at the direction of those management groups. Pole Prairie is part of the state preserve system. And so as such has some state protection. So things can't be done there, although, you know, that's, I mean, outside things. So that gives it a lot of protection. We have been, because of COVID and because of the last person who headed the Friends group, Jim Murdoch, passed away about 3 years ago. There was nothing was happening. And so, well, I won't say that. A lot of things were happening, basically because Jimmy Thompson, a longtime citizen scientist, a phenomenal individual, Jimmy worked up there sort of on his own and did a lot of things. If there are people out there who are listening who haven't been up to Pole Prairie for 4 or 5 years, we'd encourage them to come some prairie hikes this summer. The first one is actually tomorrow, so this is a perfect way to publicize it. Those are going to happen on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. And let's say tomorrow is the first one.
Mm-hmm. Are they once a month, Paul, or are they a little more frequent than that?
We're going to have five total hikes. And okay, let's say, I want to say, if I had my phone here, Wednesday, the 13th of...
Well, I'll tell you what, you've got...
I'll announce it here in just a second.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. And just to let our listeners know, Jimmy Thompson, who was a longtime prairie advocate, I mean, he's discovered some things in the state, especially around Story County and central Iowa that were new species. He also just recently passed away. So we've lost another, I would say, tall compass plant of the prairie realm, to say the least. So.
Yes. So, okay, so the other hikes will be on the 13th of July, mm-hmm, the 3rd of August, the 24th of August, and then the 14th of September. Okay. And we have people to lead all of those hikes. You know, as you know, Mike, Ames in central Iowa is just kind of a mecca and a gathering spot for people who are interested in prairie, including you. And so we have this wealth of knowledge and information. So there are leaders who know the prairie well and know prairie plants and prairie invertebrates, all the species that are there that are going to lead these hikes. The first one will be led by Ryan Schmidt, who's the Central Iowa land steward for Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. So he's a perfect person to start these hikes off. Anyway, if people haven't been there, there really has been a lot of work that's gone on, although it wasn't in an organized fashion. So one of the things we're trying to do now is get the Friends group more active and up and running. So one of the things I'd say is that some of us have been around quite a while and are, if you will, aging out of that working group. We're still willing to put in effort. Our bodies just don't want to cooperate necessarily with our plans and our goals. So if there are younger people who are want to get interested in prairie, this is a perfect way to do that. And these prairie hikes where, you know, prairie is interesting. There are plants, as you know, coming up all spring, summer, and fall, different varieties. So that's why we want to have these hikes about every 3 weeks, because the prairie will change notably at some of those intervals. And so people can come out and see where, you know, if they've got roses, they bloom for a while and then they're done. The same thing happens on prairie, but there's a new species to pop up and flower and so forth. So the diversity in prairie is just phenomenal, as you know.
Pat's got a question for you, Paul.
Yes.
Sure, Pat.
The opportunity to experience these outdoor living classrooms is pretty astounding when I think of all the schools in Iowa. But right here at Ames, Iowa, they have a natural preserve pretty much right on campus. And also the names passing along this legacy of Jimmy Thompson and, well, Edward Pohl, the name of the Ames High Prairie. These were giants in the botanical world. And now all of the students have the opportunity to learn and to grow with those previous efforts. So what you're doing out there is nothing short of phenomenal.
Well, thank you, Pat. That's for people who maybe don't have much history in that. You know, Iowa was the only state, I believe, covered by tallgrass prairie. And today in Iowa, less than 0.1% of that prairie remains. So these areas are particularly noteworthy. And they struggle with lots of issues because invasive species, as you were talking about with your previous guest, are just chronically wanting to populate the prairie. So one of the things we do is, as she was referencing this, trying to remove those invasive species. And a lot of those have been removed. We have pictures going back almost 100 years to the 1930s. And those pictures show that the woody species, which would not have been there to any great extent, almost completely overpopulated this area. And there still are a fair number of woodlands there. But one of the things we're trying to do is tree removal, which, you know, changes the amount of sunshine that hits the ground, and repopulate that as much as we can to what it would have looked like back in the, you know, in the 1800s. And that's a big job because trees keep wanting to grow. And as you were talking about buckthorn and honeysuckle, the mustards, garlic mustard. So it's been degraded. It, you know, part of it was a pig pasture at one time on a farm. A lot of the open areas don't have the species that originally were there. And one of the things that we're working on is the preserve board is very careful about reintroducing species there because they want to have it as natural, as original as it can be. So we're careful about adding species back to this area, but we do have a plan and working with INHF to do local harvests from prairie remnant areas around the county and within a given radius of the area to begin to repopulate some of these degraded areas, which is really important. Some species have taken over. We've got raspberries growing there that wouldn't have been there. Sure. And so we've got some work. There's always work to do. Prairies never rest.
Prairies are a dream for a manager and sometimes a nightmare is the way I look at it. I know that one of the instructors there at Ames High, Mike Todd, is instrumental and is able to use that as kind of a living laboratory for his students. And in years past, I know that some of the students have been prairie ambassadors. Are they working with you as well, Paul? And we've got about 2-3 minutes left to visit.
Sure. The students are working there. That program has been reduced a little bit at the high school, but Mike is still out there with his classes. He just uses that as a way to introduce students to the outdoors. They've done some species cultivation, if you will. They've had a little plot out there where they've raised butterfly weed and some other things to reintroduce. They're still working. We're just kind of getting our feet back on the ground. So I've talked with Mike, but we haven't had it's hard to gather people together sometimes. And so we haven't had a lot of conversation, but I know as long as Mike's at the high school, that their activity, their presence will be there. Sure. And that'll be great.
Paul, for those who don't know, they may know where the high school is, but you're not going to see the prairie if you are in the front of the high school. Can you just give listeners a direction?
Sure. For the moment, so because construction is ongoing and changing, where we can meet will be a little bit up in the air. But for right now, for the first meeting, people can go west on 20th Street, and there's a parking lot on the north side of the old high school, which is the faculty parking lot. Mm-hmm. People can park there and then walk down the west side of the high school to the entrance to the prairie. And we may have to park on the southeast area on future hikes that as they deconstruct the old high school, that may be closed. And so in future hikes, if that's closed, the plan is to park it on the new parking lot in the southeast corner. And you can actually walk through the Ames High, the football field stadium area. And so that's going around the south end and walk to the prairie. The school is going to leave the football field open for public use for running, jogging, and so forth all through the summer. We'll try and put up some signs as things evolve.
But sure.
For the moment, north parking lot.
Very understandable. Thank you, Paul. What is the best contact information if folks are interested in getting a hold of the Friends group?
I'm probably the contact on this. So okay. Email is Paul Reedhead, PaulReedhead@gmail.com. And my phone number is 515-232-5407. That's a cell number, although it sounds like a landline. Best thing to do is call or text me, because if inclement weather, threatening weather, or extreme heat is happening, we will call off a hike that day. And so if they text me, I'll let them know. By early afternoon, we'll have a decision made on that.
Very good. Paul, thanks for joining us. And feel free, you know, to reach out to us in the future for anything else that occurs with the Pole Prairie. I mean, this is another one of those little hidden gems that we have here, located in central part of the community. Something that people need to realize is there. Part of our natural history, we need to keep touch with those. One of those,
absolutely.
One of
Thank
those little touchstones. Thanks, Paul, and we'll visit with you again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Pat.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose the lights?
And we want to welcome Susan Guyasta. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, sounds like you're sounding a little bit, a little more alert today. Either that, or I'm sounding more alert. I had a long weekend, so maybe the heat's gotten to all of us a little bit. What have you got, Susan? Before we visit with your guest, who seems to be, gosh, this is going to be an encore for him, a Tuesday encore. But
it is. Well, I'm actually outside trying to see if I can talk with you and enjoy this beautiful morning, because I know it's going to get very warm today. Yeah. And we'll get to Don in just a minute. I think I am afraid that bringing our electric services director on throughout the summer might become a new feature for us, just because of the need for electricity in the area. But before I get to Don, let me talk a little bit about some announcements. Yesterday, we partnered with Iowa State University to send out a release that I think is exciting to a lot of people. The pedestrian bridge over University Boulevard is going to be set into place next week, starting Monday, June 27th. And to set that bridge in place, that's a sort of a major undertaking that will require some overnight street closures, and then during the day, diverting traffic to one lane in each direction.
Yeah,
so if
that's
you're
gonna,
accustomed to taking taking University Boulevard into work or home.
That's going to be an amazing addition there, as far, especially when there's activities. I would think there might be a football game scheduled, and the crowd won't have to access and cross University as much as often by using that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful asset for safety, for pedestrian safety, to get people across University Boulevard. The first home football game is September 3rd, so obviously they want to be, Iowa State wants to be ready to open the bridge and have people use it before that point. And so far they're on schedule. So that week, starting next Monday, June 27th, if you're used to taking University Boulevard, you really might want to look at rerouting yourself, because it will be a lot more congested than usual. And then, of course, overnight when they're doing the work, it will be closed.
Sounds like that Grand Avenue. Yeah, that Grand Avenue addition is a timely addition.
Yeah, that is a good point. If you can instead take a parallel road, I would certainly suggest that you go that way. Just one other thing, getting off construction, just a reminder that our municipal band concert will be held this Thursday at 8 p.m. I hope people are enjoying those. They are just being held through June and July, and then they go away. And as we get into summer, it is just a nice tradition to go out and enjoy the municipal band. 8 o'clock, they play for about an hour. You can see the lights in the Durham band shell. It's really a fun event.
Yeah, and for any of those ice cream lovers out there, they might want to eat it ahead of time before they get out there. It's going to be a little warm.
Yeah, once again, another toasty night. And, well, speaking of weather, let's talk with Don Com about how we think today was going to go for electric use.
Yeah, Don, welcome to Local Talk again on a Tuesday. I think we're starting to get a charge out of your appearances here.
Oh, my, that's good. I'm just kind of here to be here to lighten up your life a little bit. So, I'm glad Susan's sitting outside because I could just hear the birds in the background as she was talking. So that was a nice, I don't know, Susan, if you could hear the birds, but just coming through your phone, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about today's weather. Yesterday was hot. Today is going to be hot again today. And again, we have plenty of energy. But one of the things that we're really trying to be aware of this year is how much people are using at the heat of the day. We want to try to avoid hitting what we call a new peak, a time when everybody is asking for energy. And that's in that 4 o'clock till 8 o'clock time frame. With the hot weather, air conditioners kick in, people want to plug in their cars, people are turning their stoves on and trying to get laundry done. And that just causes us to start thinking about building another power plant. And if we can avoid that next power plant, even for another year or two, that's just going to save all of our customers a lot of money in the years to come. So we're kindly asking our customers if they can refrain from unnecessary use of electricity in that 4 to 8 time frame. It's going to help all of us.
Yeah, we reviewed a little bit some of those off-peak hours of things that folks can do, and that would be if you're going to be doing laundry, do it after, I would say, even later, past 9, 10 o'clock if you can. Do so. Most of those systems are now automated somewhat so that you got timers and things. Also, like you say, if you're charging a vehicle or cooking, either enjoy a grill, an outside, or maybe a restaurant or something like that, and avoid firing up your heating units. That will also have less of an impact on the comfort of your home, too, I would think.
Absolutely. And if you look at your thermostat, and I was researching this just the other day, if you turn your thermostat up 1 degree in the summer, so let's say you've got it set for 74 and you turn it to 75, that could save you up to 3% on your electric bill. And that may not sound like a lot, but that's just one small little activity that can have an impact on your bill. If you're at Susan's house, they start at about 80. So they'll turn theirs up to maybe 81 before they kick their air conditioner on.
Well, I don't
quite. We set it at 78.
Yeah.
I was outruled on 80.
I also have mine around 78, and I have one fan. And there are three cats and a dog that sit in front of that fan. So I've got fur all over the house, but it remains cool.
And fans are an excellent alternative. You would be surprised, having just that air movement, how
yes.
much it cools down the body.
Yes.
And it uses so much less electricity that I encourage fan usage, especially in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to move that air to... You know, your body naturally is going to perspire somewhat, and moving that air across that helps you release that heat, and you feel much, much cooler. And, you know, wear a T-shirt, wear shorts, put sandals on, dress for the weather. Enjoy it. Enjoy the freedom.
Yeah. And another thing that people may not think about, too, is, you say, boy, should I have my curtains open or closed in the summer? And actually, the rule of thumb is if you can keep that sunlight coming in your windows, that sunlight is going to heat up your house more than maybe having to turn on a light because your curtains are closed or your shades are drawn. So during the hot of the sun, during the heat of the sun, noon and a little bit later, keep the drapes a little bit closed and keep those blinds down, and it will save a lot more energy than having to turn on a light just to light the room.
Or if you're planning to build a new facility, a new domicile, do like some of us have done and build in some of those energy-saving designs like extra long eaves so that in this time of year, you don't get that direct sun, but you still get the light. And take advantage of all of those new building practices if you are so lucky and fortunate to be building new.
You know, it's interesting you say that it's new building practices, and I've been visiting Frank Lloyd Wright homes, and that was one of his styles, is very, very deep eaves, just for exactly what you're talking about, is preventing that sun from coming in the summer, but then in the wintertime, those long eaves actually help to heat the house.
Right.
So a new practice that originated probably back in the, I want to say 30s and 40s. I'm not an architect, but I'm sure there are people listening that know greater details on that.
So, yeah.
Very good idea.
Yeah. And insulation. If you've got a well-insulated but well-ventilated home, that sure saves a lot of your heating and cooling as well. And I can vouch for that because we did that with our home.
Putting more insulation is always a good idea. And that kind of extending that one step farther, if you're at a place where you're thinking that you need to replace an air conditioner and a furnace, I strongly encourage you to look at heat pumps. Geothermal and air heat pumps are extremely efficient, both for heating and cooling.
Yes.
And if you're concerned, go ahead.
I was just going to say, again, I can speak from personal experience that we did that when we built an addition on our place and probably cut those costs almost in half. In fact, summertime cooling is much less than winter. You still have to jack that heat up from 55 degrees up to your living temperature. But, the cooling part, as long as your system is working properly, it's fairly inexpensive because you're taking that and putting that heat into that. The ground is a sink.
And extremely efficient to run. There are some upfront costs that come with it, but in the long run, not only are you saving money on that, but it's also helping in the environment. You're not burning fossil fuels for heating, and like you said, cooling is incredibly more efficient with geothermal.
Well, Don, in the remaining minute that we have, do you have anything else to add?
Just on days like today, think about what you can do. One little change in your habit that will cause you to save that energy. When all that adds up, it really makes an impact. And the last thing I'd like to say is, through efforts that your listeners did and others this last week, I want to thank them for what they did, because it did avoid a peak last week. We cut quite a bit of energy out of our Tuesday afternoon load. And so people were really listening, and I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart that it made a big difference. And if we can do it again today, it would really help. So don't think that a little bit is not going to help. Every little bit helps.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, Susan. Thanks for joining us today on Tuesday Local Talk, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
As we listen to the cool thunderstorm, Sam Wormley is going to join us here for a 20-second announcement. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. I just want to wish happy summer solstice to all our KHOI listeners. As happened many years when my mom was alive, she would call me in a day or two and she'd say, "Number one, have you noticed how short the days are getting?" So they will start to get shorter. Anyway, happy summer solstice to everybody.
Thank you, Sam. And Pat, you had the opportunity to have an interview with Guy Zephyr about solstice.
I hopped on a band of the Yankton Sioux Nation. We caught up to and talked about this first day of summer. I would like to ask you, just to start, what nation are you?
Oh, okay. My name is Guy Zephyr. I'm a Yankton Sioux, or our people call Ihonktiwa, Dakota, which is located in southern part of South Dakota.
I've heard you referred to as the people of the East.
Yeah, we've been that. On our flag, we got the land of the friendly people.
Very much so. We've got the summer solstice is upon us, and I can't help but wonder how your native culture views this time of summer renewal.
Oh, yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, it means different things to different people. And I know, like, with some of the division between, you know, the ancestral or the old ways, and then there's the people that are kind of converted into, I don't know, Presbyterian, Catholic, whatever religion, which I don't have a problem with. But the people that I associate my spiritual beliefs in are with the people that follow the pipe or the chinupa. And we don't use all the fancy terms, you know, like the summer solstice, where, you know, we don't hardly hear those types of terms. We, you know, sometimes we call it the new year. We're starting a new year or whatever, kind of when time of the sun dance, when that starts. But the summer solstice, yeah, we don't use that term very much, but I know what it means. You know, it's kind of to us like a renewal of life for ourselves, for our families, for a new year. You know, usually it's the beginning of our new year, because that's when we start our sun dances. And yeah.
So if there is such a thing, a typical year. So you mentioned a sun dance, and that's a 4-day spiritual undertaking?
Yes. It's usually 4 days, the dance itself, but there's a 4-day preparation, and then there's a 4-day grounding. So usually it's about a 12 days. Just like there's 12 months in a year, there's 12 days total.
You say the first day of summer then would be your new year. Is that the first day of the Sundance? After 4 days of purification, then you'd have the first day of Sundance would be represent your summer? Is that?
Yeah. It don't usually go like right to the day, because there's like Sundances all over Indian country. Some start in early June, some won't start till like you know, late August or early September. So all through the summer months is when those take place. So sometimes like someone, if they Sundance in August, then their new year would be in August. So it just kind of depends, yeah.
So let's kind of unpack this a little bit further. So then your first day would be summer. Are the other 3 days in succession then autumn, winter, spring?
Yeah, yes.
These are the 4 days.
Yes.
And was there a time that the Sundance was illegal or not allowed?
Oh, yeah, it's been illegal probably up until the Freedom Religion Act, I think, was in 1978. So it was kind of outlawed and banned for up to that time.
So how many Sundances would you estimate have resurgenced or been refreshed or that have started taking up these traditional ways again?
Yeah, too many to know about now, but I could probably, in my life, I probably have danced at about 7 or 8 of different Sundances around South Dakota.
I see. Uh-huh. Are there, in the modern era, hundreds of Sundances, or?
I would say that, or even more. I don't really have a clue, because I know they have, you know, they have Sundances in Canada. I know they had one in South America, and I see just on YouTube, you know, I know Crow Dog passed away last year, but there was a short video, maybe like a half hour long, where Japan was asking for Sundance in their country.
So this is a relatively new activity, but of the old traditional ways. This is this exciting for the Native community, the Native culture? How do you feel about the resurgence of the Sundances then, Mr. Zephyr?
Oh, I'm really excited about it. I always look forward to it, you know, like I start looking forward to it like during the winter months when it's cold, because I always think, well, can't wait to get warmed up. And, you know, we start thinking about the Sundance. And usually, you know, a lot of times with those thoughts, when they come to me, it's usually in the winter time, because a lot of times that's when people get colds and flus and things like that. And when that happens, I usually, you know, I usually make prayers, but then I think about the year before, you know, the Sundance that was completed before, and I try to remember those prayers and what happened during those 4 days that I danced, because, you know, there's always going to be difficulties and sicknesses no matter what, you know, there's always going to be some difficulty somewhere, because life is not perfect for everybody.
Mm-hmm. So when you have these refreshing memories of the Sundance, I guess that would be your third day. So the third day of the Sundance then would be reflected in the coming winter season. Is there a direct correlation to struggles of the third day that may correlate into struggles of the winter season?
Yeah, it goes both ways. For me, it's usually a struggle, because that's when that time of the year, you know, when you see things, you know, when you see people struggling with, you know, whether it's health or financial issues, whatever kind of issues people struggle with, you know, we could see them. We you know, if they're relatives, well, we feel it more. And in the Sundance, the winter time is usually representing the third day. Mm-hmm. And so on the third day they call the healing. They have a healing round to where a lot of the supporters, the spectators, members of the dancers that come out to the tree, or they get doctored. There's doctoring round, which lasts maybe anywhere from an hour to 4 or 5 hours long. So that day is usually probably one of the hardest days of the Sundance, because there is your prayers become more focused into the people that are having those difficulties. What I do personally is I remember faces and people that come through, because most times they're most of my relatives. When we're making in prayer, sometimes our hearts want them to be well, their well-being, their whatever is ailing them. Sometimes for me, I'll ask Creator to that pain, if it could come, I'll carry the pain for them. That's how much I love
as a Sundancer. You're essentially assisting your family or your circle of friends, it sounds like.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, this again, for a ceremony that was essentially blocked or deemed illegal or discontinued for a number of years, to have it returned, that must be pretty important to you.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, in any culture, you know, in any culture around the world, you know, family is very important. You know, no matter what culture, in your mothers, your fathers, yeah, you know, your brothers, sisters, you know, and all the people that you love, you know, when they love you, they're going to support what you do. They're going to support the way you pray, the way you do your best to take care of each other. In this time of the year, when Sundance approaches, I will start remembering my relatives over this past year that weren't at the Sundance before, that came to me with problems, issues, whatever it was. So when Sundance comes this year, I'll remember them and I'll make prayers specifically for them for their situation. So if it's still with them, that hopefully that that those prayers can alleviate some of the issues or stresses that they're having with that situation.
I hope our listeners can appreciate the full dimension of a ceremony that is universally accepted around the world of strengthening family, and the irony that that would be viewed as a threat to an American culture. I'm glad we've kind of worked through some of this understanding, and your Sundance can continue from this year and next year and forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, in fact, you know, there's some really interesting views or points, you know, when it comes to the way that we practice healing for our people, you know, like even in Christianity, you know, there's the relationship between the way Jesus suffered, the way that he prayed while he's suffering, all the sacrifices that he did, but he did it for the whole world. He did it for the whole world. And we still make prayers like that. I'm sure there's a lot of people around the world that make prayers like that all the time. And I know that there is, because I know there, even though that I do it, there's many, many more people that I know that do it that we don't know about. They do it all the time in different ways, you know. So that thought, when a person loves so much, you know, the way God loves creation and all life, there are people out there like that. I know, because I've met a lot of them. I met a lot of good people throughout my life that think and feel the same way. And it's not associated with the way that I practice my spiritual beliefs. It's in people's hearts that they are like that.
Thank you so much for sharing, Mr. Zephyr, Guy Zephyr from, and you're in Sioux Falls, South
Dakota? Yeah, Yankton Sioux. Yeah.
Yeah, and is there anything else that you'd like to share with us this morning?
Oh, I just want to say thank you to all the people that have been listening, and I just want everyone to know that, you know, this year, too, prayers will be going out to all of you, the world, and the situations that are going around the world. No matter how small we are, we could still have those generous, loving thoughts for mankind, for the animals, for the birds, for the water, for the air, you know, so because we need all of that. We need all of it, so we pray for all of it.
I hope it's okay. Let's part with an expression I heard your brother Sherwin say quite often is, love generously.
Yes. Yes. That is awesome. I love that. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, Guy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The simple guy.
So, simple guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look forward to seeing you. And
alrighty.
I'll be thinking and praying with you right along. So take care, my friend.
All right, Pat, you have a good day.
Well, I love
you. Like God does.
Yeah.
Love you.
See you next time.
Thanks to producer Lynn Carey for assistance on this morning's program, and a tip of the chapeau to Mike Murphy for engineering this morning's local talk. And thanks to Pat Schlerbaum. You heard from Paul Reedhead, Aja Lyons, Guy Zephyr, and from the City of Ames, you also heard from Susan Guiazda and Service Electric Service Director Donald Kahn.
Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, followed by All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracked by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And see you again
on the radio.
This is KHOI, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. This is Brittany. Thank you for listening.